Welcome to the Naughty Child Podcast. With me, Richard.
And me, Polly.
I'm the dad.
And I'm the daughter.
I'll do everything before I leave. I need to find that bag on my quiz.
Alex Hartley took us off air in Brighton earlier this year.
I'm a huge fan of Pepper.
We thought we were really funny.
Bobby, I'm doing a podcast, man. Come on.
Well, my dog is now called Jimmy Anderson.
Oh, well, Manchester Originals aren't through to the Eliminators, so I've got to change that team.
Do you cook French food? Like, do you cook frog legs and snails?
Just lock myself in a procedure room.
Sophie Eccleston's the worst, like having a child with you when she's on tour.
I don't know whether it shows something about me or whether it just shows I'm a little bit stupid.
So, another big week, Paul. WPL is up and running.
Yeah, it's been the first week of WPL. Last week, I said that I'd be supporting Delhi, which I think was the right decision. I mean, they did get thrashed by Mumbai Indians today, but we don't need to talk about that.
That was weird, wasn't it? Because that game, we were expecting...
Like,
we
big,
talked about
big scores.
Could 200 be set and chased down?
Exactly, because both teams have been incredible. And I mean, you look at Delhi's batting lineup, and it's just like there's endless depth.
However,
getting bowled out for just over 100 today didn't quite work out. But yeah, I think it's been an interesting tournament so far because there have been some incredible performances, as we mentioned, from Mumbai and Delhi. But then you look at RCB, who have just lost every game awfully, and Gujarat Giants have lost. They beat RCB.
That's right.
But again, that was kind of a bottom of the table game. So
so far bottom of the table, but things can change.
Exactly, everything can change. But yeah, there has been a bit of talk about the size of the boundaries. And I don't think they're actually that much smaller than that of the ones in the 100 or WBBL. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Yeah, these scores do seem really high. I mean, perhaps it's the pitch, but I don't quite know.
Yeah, I mean, there have been some high scores. There have been some low scores as well.
Very
though.
True.
Again, I read similar things to you, that the boundary length is set out within the terms and conditions, I think, which I think is 55 metres or more.
Yeah.
And that's fairly similar to, as you say, with the franchise competitions around the world. But yeah, there's been some amazing performances. Mm-hmm. And it's generally been really good for the game, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
And the stars have shone, and then some of the local Indian talent has shone as well.
Tara Norris.
Yeah.
Outstanding.
Absolutely brilliant. Yeah, really good.
I mean, there's been an interesting question about, because obviously she's the only associate player over there, but is she really an associate player? You know, she's a professional cricketer who's played all her cricket in England, but, you know, she is flying the flag for the USA. But then there have been people saying, you know, well, how far is an England debut away for her? And, you know, will she take the opportunity if it arises?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think because she's left arm and Tash Farrant's been sort of long-term injured.
Yeah.
And Freya Kemp's come in and she's long-term injured now as well. You sort of put the question, who else could there be as a left-arm pace bowler? And she stands out.
Yeah. And I think she'll get more opportunities now. She's moved to Thunder from the Vipers.
Yes.
So I think she could be utilised really well there. And yeah, she took four for, was it? In the... Oh, it was Pfeiffer.
She took Pfeiffer.
So really, really good. The next thing I want to chat a bit about is the Ireland contracts.
Okay.
So Ireland have announced a couple more contracts. They're kind of slightly increasing the system, putting different people on different ones. But Amy Maguire has got her first contract.
Friend of the pod.
Exactly, friend of the podcast. So she's got the smaller, like least big contract. So it's really good, actually. I like the system they have in Ireland. So for the first time, they've introduced like multi-year contracts. So I think four or five players, so like Gabby Lewis, Orla Prendergast, have got those contracts where they sign for a couple of years. It's a full-time contract. A few players have signed that, but will stay on an education slash part-time one until they finish uni and stuff. And then they've got the education one, so people can go to college, uni, and still be a cricketer, not have to have like a part-time job alongside that. But there's not the pressure of being a full-time cricketer. And then they've got these, they call them a casual contract, which I got a casual contract. So it means that players get paid for playing matches and get like getting like cost covered and expenses. That's it. But then they also have access to strength and conditioning, nutrition, psychologists, all that sort of thing. So I think for someone like Amy McGuire as well, who's, you know, she's 16, she's still in school, that's such a important factor in kind of developing your game without kind of throwing you in at the deep end with a big contract. So I think that's quite exciting. And then because last year they announced increased investment, I think it was 1.5 million euros every year. And, you know, that's continued for this year, which is good to see.
It's so impressive what they're doing in Ireland to build up their cricket. And and it seems that their sides are developing really nicely as a result of that.
Yeah.
But then within those sides, there are individual players who are really developing, aren't there? And are becoming, you know, marketable global superstars as well. So it's really encouraging to see. And they're building a new stadium as well, aren't they?
Yeah.
Just on the outskirts of Dublin. Mm-hmm. So it feels like cricket in Ireland is really taking off.
Yeah, I mean, the opportunities for players in franchise tournaments as well. So Laura Dilani's over in Pakistan for it's not quite the Pakistan Super League, but exhibition games over there. A number of players are in the 100 draft. I would imagine, you know, other tournaments people would be going, a couple of players going to Fairbreak, things like that. So There are increased opportunities, which is really exciting to see.
Yeah, and their performance in the World Cup as well was, you know, they lost every game, but it was by no means a disgrace.
Exactly. Yeah, definitely. The other thing I want to chat about, which I brought this up with you yesterday, and I just felt it needed a little bit of airtime on the podcast, is International Women's Day.
Yeah.
So
8th of March.
Yeah, it was on Wednesday. See, I feel very mixed about International Women's Day because I like it. However, it is a great opportunity for companies to try and look good when they don't really care about equity, equality, or it's a tick box for them. And so sometimes that is a bit frustrating because 8th of March is like, wow, look at us. Every other day of the year, we don't care. And one thing that just kind of baffled me a bit this year was a lot of sports teams, actually men's sports teams, really try to be like, okay, we're gonna female empowerment, this is what we're all about, and got their male players to either do a video saying who they're like, which woman inspires them the most, or an inspirational woman. And even one football team had them with the names on the back of their shirts and everything. However, 99% of the answers were mum, or the slight variation, wife or nan. And I just thought, do people not know any other inspirational women other than their mum or their nan? Like, it's great. I'm so glad that you find inspiration in your mum. Me too. However, surely, like, you could, I mean, I think one person said Serena Williams, but I'm going to be completely honest, that's a slightly bog standard answer. Like, I love Serena Williams as much as the next person, but it's an easy one to come up with.
It's very Freudian, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if I were asked to do that, I'd go for daughter.
Oh, stop it. No, but you could genuinely come up with answers, couldn't you? No, stop, you don't do this. No, it's true.
Yeah, Charlotte Edwards.
Exactly. No, but the thing is...
Roberta.
Oh, of course. And this is the thing, and I just think it doesn't reflect very well when everyone's like, oh, mum, nan. It's like if someone asked me who's an inspirational man, I love you, but I probably wouldn't be like, yeah, my dad. Like, I don't think that many people would do that. I can think of other... I can't think of anyone. No, do you know what I mean? Okay, Brendan McCullum. Yeah. I love basketball. But no, I don't know. I thought it was an interesting one because...
Jack Leach.
Jack Leach is number one hero. That is a very good point. But yeah, it made me think yesterday because it did slightly divide opinion because some people were like, oh, this is incredible. But I was just like, this is naff. And especially with a football team, when they have a women's counterpart, it doesn't look good either because it's just like... okay.
I guess you know how these things work.
Right? Yeah.
Someone, a junior member of staff, will be given this job to do. Mm. I'll have to go around and ask all the players, probably after a training session when they're about to leave.
Yeah.
And zero thought will have gone into it. Something will have been done and put out on social media. And it is token, but having a day is token, isn't it?
That's true.
I guess the whole point of equality is that it goes beyond a day.
Yeah.
And I suppose what the day does, it just highlights this as a thing.
Well, if anyone wants to celebrate International Women's Day, I heard Lewisham Hospital were offering all their female staff free KFC. So I think that's a great idea. Seen a lot of baked goods going around. I got none of this. So I think that's how we should celebrate International Women's Day. Free KFC, free baked goods. That's what I'm about.
Good ideas for next year.
Exactly. I don't think there's anything else we need to talk about.
No, I mean, the new season will be on us very shortly. Well, you can tell by the snow on the ground outside.
We should probably mention that. It's been a snow day for you, not a snow day for me.
Well, I did go. I was in school from 7 o'clock, and then just after 8 o'clock, they decided to shut it.
Well, my school is about 5 miles away, and it took me 3 hours to get to school. And the bus crashed on the way. All good fun, and then I was at school for about 2 hours, and then went home because I didn't have any more lessons. So the cricket season is upon us. I think warm up games are supposed to start in just over 2 weeks, so that could be a very interesting one. Good old county championships in the snow.
Yes, it's a tradition really for the start of the season. It's got to be really cold.
So should we introduce our guest?
This was a really, really good guest. I think this is not someone I'd ever heard of. Can I say that from the start? But you did some research and found this person.
Okay, and I didn't do I knew about this person. I think I don't even digging down the internet to find guests. Sorry, okay. I want to defend myself there.
Okay, so you knew this person?
Not personally.
Deanna
Cooper.
And she was amazing because she is a professional footballer who plays in the Women's Super League, which is the top professional division of women's football. But previously, she was a top cricketer. And at some point in her life, she made that change.
Yeah. So we had a really interesting chat because I think the one thing that's great when you have someone that's experienced two sports to quite a high level is they can see the differences between them, but then also kind of the parallels between the two. Firstly, what's your cricket story and how did cricket first start for you?
So I started playing because my brother plays cricket, still does. He played for our local boys team, and so I used to go with my dad down to just kind of watch him train, and then all of a sudden, as you do, you end up joining in. I started off playing for my local boys team before quite early on getting a almost a trial for Kent under 11s and then just progressed from there, really. But yeah, I loved it. I loved every second of it.
And did you have many female role models in cricket growing up? Because I know until, I suppose it was probably about 2017, I did not know any female cricketers despite loving the sport.
Yeah, so I was quite lucky, really. So I was like 13 years old when I started training with the Kent senior women's team. And obviously at that time, pretty much all of them played for the England team. So they were kind of my role models growing up. Obviously playing on the same team was like Charlotte Edwards, Lydia Greenway. Those sort of players was just incredible. And obviously you learnt so much from them.
So how did it work out sort of developing your football and cricket at the same time? Or was it not quite like that? Was cricket very much your first love and football was something else?
They kind of went side by side for a very, very long time. So I probably started playing football a little bit before I started playing cricket. Also for a boys team. But yeah, no, the whole way through, they kind of just matched up until it got to a point where it was quite difficult for me to do both at the same time. So obviously at one point I was in the England Cricket Academy and also playing for England under 19 football. So it was just kind of a bit crazy, to be honest. And it got to the point, I've always said I was always more talented at cricket, but my love was with football. So it was, yeah, it was a bit of a strange one. It was quite a long decision-making process that kind of got made for me in the end. But yeah, it was a long process and it wasn't always easy at times.
Do you think professionalism played a part in that? Because of course, at the time you're playing cricket, I think the England women had just turned professional, but other than that, it was very much amateur. But of course, football has been slightly more ahead.
Yeah, so obviously playing cricket growing up, it was all amateur. I never actually played any cricket where I got paid at all any sort of money. So that was it was more for like the love of the game. That it did play a little bit of a part, but at the time when I finished playing cricket, I still wasn't playing professional football. So it wasn't really a decision maker for that sort of thing. It was more like injuries that made me switch from cricket to football, like the levels and stuff. But yeah, it's good to see where the cricket game is now, though. That excites me a lot because I'm kind of not jealous, but I kind of wish I was in that period when I was younger, because obviously now with all the competitions and all the funding and stuff that they're getting and the way it's going is incredible.
It is, isn't it? You know, to the point now where I suppose players like Nat Siverbrunt, who you played alongside back in the day, is probably being paid more now for the WPL than the top, you know, lionesses are being paid. It's just amazing, isn't it?
It's come such a long way. Like, as I say, for years and years, we all just played cricket as a hobby. And it was like, it was an achievement to play for your county, but that's kind of all it was. It wasn't your job. Whereas now, the fact that even like, you've got the 100 now where teams are paying players to play female women's cricket is... It blows my mind, the fact that it's come that far in such a short space of time. Like, I've only not been playing cricket for probably about 6 years, 7 years maybe. And in that short period of time, it's gone from not being paid anything to a full-time competition, or many full-time competitions around the world. So it's incredible.
Yeah, it's grown so fast. And one thing we talk about a lot is kind of the challenges that come with professionalism. And when you joined a team such as Chelsea, do you think that was a struggle, kind of adapting to such a professional setup where the expectations are so high? Because I know certainly for cricketers, going from it's been your hobby to it's your job, it puts a lot more pressure on it.
Yeah, so I still don't quite believe that this is my job. Like, obviously I get paid to play football, but every now and again, I'm like, oh my gosh, I get paid to play football. Like, it's crazy, but it does add that little bit of pressure. There's also a lot more that comes into it because you're now being paid to do it. It becomes like stuff that was sometimes you didn't really have to do. Now you have to do it. And sometimes that can become a lot, but it's such a privilege to do what we do. Like, I can't honestly explain enough like how privileged I feel, because obviously I've been through that stage where I wasn't getting anything and it was just a hobby, both football and cricket, to now like being paid to play sport is just incredible. Yeah, that's a long time ago now. We went to South Africa. We actually went to and played at the same ground that the 19s played in. We did a tour with England Academy against South Africa first team. And it was my second time to South Africa. So I went with England under 17s out there, but we played in that was more of like counties could come, but England under 17s took a team, if that makes sense. But yeah, that competition was the experience of just playing in a foreign country and like playing against like the first team of South Africa was just crazy. Like the things you learn on a tour like that, like being around your teammates 24/7 for 3 weeks is crazy. But it was such an enjoyable tour and I learned so much from it.
And looking at the names of the people who were playing alongside you for England Academy and against you for South Africa, I mean, it's some of the all-time greats, really.
Yeah, that our academy team that went that year, I think.
I guess it shows that how young everyone was back there, you know, and actually maybe back in the amateur days, cricket was a much younger sport because you can't just keep playing it into your 30s when you've got to have a proper job at some point.
No, I was quite lucky. I obviously broke into the senior team when I was very young. I was like 13, so I'm not sure if I played that year. I might have played one game, but then the next year I was playing, so I was 14 years old, so I was very young playing with some very senior players. And it was, as I say, you just learn so much off of the people that are around you. And that squad that went to that tour, I think our average age was like...
Another great squad you were part of was that Kent team, and you mentioned it before, but you ended up meeting Prince Philip, didn't you, when you won the county championships, which is incredible because it was such a strong team. You mentioned Charlotte Edwards, but Alice Davidson Richards was in there as well, and so many people that have gone on to play for England and have become like really recognised names within the game.
Yeah, so we were very lucky. We obviously had a very good county squad, and when you win the national championships, you get to go to Buckingham Palace because he was the Prince Philip was the patron of the cricket tournament. So the winners of our county championship and the men's county championship both got to go to Buckingham Palace and meet Prince Philip. So I think I went four times in all. And by the time it got to the fourth time, he was like, oh, you guys are back again. Because obviously we had such a good squad. As I say, you had Charlotte Edwards, Lydia Greenway, Tammy Beaumont. So I could keep, the names could keep coming out, but like it was a great squad. And just having the experience of going for tea and to receive your medal from someone like Prince Philip was an unbelievable experience.
And we've seen what Charlotte Edwards has done for the women's game in terms of her success. Someone in football that's had similar success in terms of coaching role is your former manager, Emma Hayes. Now I've got kind of an interesting question because...
I obviously saw the two of them in very different lights. So Charlotte Edwards was my captain, so she was a teammate and my captain. She could also be brutal at times. She had very high standards, but that kind of led, that's why her teams are always so successful, because she had high standards. And I suppose that's exactly the same with Emma Hayes, that her standards are so high. I don't know if you've seen the documentary that came out, but yeah, we'll talk about that later. But yeah, no, she expects her teams to win, and so did Charlotte Edwards. And if they didn't, she wanted to know why. And so I just think with managers, they can have different approaches to things. But I think a lot of the ones that reach the levels of Charlotte Edwards and Emma Hayes are because of the standards they set for themselves and for their team that are playing around them. And I think that's really, really important when it comes to success anyway.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we've seen the documentary. Is it weird having kind of those key moments in your career or quite like emotional moments published? Because certainly in the women's game, there's never really been that before. And I think sometimes there's this approach that everything's really happy in the women's game. It's all nice, when that in reality is not the case.
Yeah, what I will say about that is that was filmed over an 18-month period. And I think I only cried like four times, but they just happened to get all four times on camera. Okay. So I loved my time at Chelsea. And, but yeah, it was when some of it I found a bit cringy because obviously it came out like 2 years after we'd filmed it. So a lot had changed since then. But, and I was in a very different place. But yeah, it's a bit strange looking it back. It's great to have those memories. Obviously, it reminds me of how much I loved it there. Yes, there were days and there were times things happened. In any job, I think that happens. But yeah, that it was quite cool watching it back. And it's also quite nice on that to hear how staff are talking about you when you're not there, because obviously as athletes, you don't ever get to hear that. So there was an interview on there where I was in the room and they was talking to me, and then I go out of the room and then they carry on talking. And I obviously didn't hear that. So to hear them talk about me in the light that they did was actually really nice. And I enjoyed that bit. I didn't enjoy crying on camera what seemed like 24/7, but
I think you got a lot of sympathy from it. People be like, oh, I feel bad for her. So that's what
I was going for. But it is what it is. Yeah, people, like, I've had like quite a few messages, to be fair, about it, and saying how they liked the way I was there for the team. And yeah, I absolutely loved my time at Chelsea, and the girls there were incredible. The staff were amazing, but I wanted to play, and that's what it came down to at the end of the day. Your career is short, especially in something like football. So it's only so long you can sit on the bench for.
And do you still stay in touch with any of your former cricket colleagues, or do you stay sort of closely in touch with the game as well and get to many cricket games during the summer?
Yeah, I was talking to Georgia Adams, she's coming to the Arsenal game next week. So I was talking to her the other day. I talked to Tammy and Alex quite a bit on social media. I haven't managed to get to many cricket games yet, but I'm hoping to go this summer. Just because I want to see what the hundreds are about, really. I've watched it on telly, obviously, but I've not actually got to a game yet. I do miss it, though. I've been saying to... I actually asked one of my managers the other day if I could play this summer, but unfortunately, contractually, I'm not allowed to.
Oh, no, but you can't beat village cricket. So once you retire, you have to go back to playing that.
Yeah, it should be... that'll be fun. I always used to love playing for my men's team, so... Might give that a go first and then see what happens from there. I've not written off my whole getting paid for cricket situation yet, so we'll see how that goes.
I mean, the 100 is an interesting one, and the whole concept of head-to-head games where you have the women's game and the men's game happening, you know, back-to-back. And I guess what's happened over the 2 years of the 100 is that the women's game has sort of really benefited and built up an audience through doing that. And actually it feels like it's kind of improved the whole experience of the 100, because it takes a little bit away from the, I don't want to be too critical of cricket crowds, but maybe some of the sort of more boisterous toxic masculinity that you might find in a crowd. Do you think the experience of women's football is kind of going through a similar progression at the moment?
Yeah, I feel, especially since the Euros, there's been a massive increase in viewership, both on TV and in the crowds. And I think the interesting thing that I've found is that because there's a lot more eyes on the women's football games, it comes with a lot of things that women's footballers haven't had to deal with in the past. So there's a lot of, like, people are getting more into it, basically. And that becomes, so people become more opinionated about what they're watching and what they're seeing. So people are getting more criticism than they would normally get, especially on social media. Players just aren't used to it. But yeah, I definitely think putting the men's and the women's games next to each other or back to back has really helped the women's game. But again, I do think that it's got a long way to go, but I think it's definitely improving, which is really good to see, because it's only going to help grow the game in the long run, which is what everyone wants.
But yeah, the 100's incredible. Like, the atmosphere at the games is amazing, especially as it starts to get dark and then there are fireworks and stuff. It's great. But if you had to support a 100 team, which one would you support?
This is the problem with not being in and around cricket as much. I always get confused between the Rachel Hey Ho Flint teams. Oh, yeah. 100 teams.
Yeah. I mean, this is an interesting point in terms of marketing the game, because they are very similar and really confusing. Mm. You know, is it Northern Diamonds or Northern Superchargers, Southern Vipers, Southern Brave, all that kind of thing. I mean, it seems to me you'll be Southern Brave, really, because you got Lottie there.
So a lot of the team, yeah, let's go. Yeah, we'll go with them.
Yeah, if you lost, you'll get to the final anyway, regardless.
So. You might not win.
A lot of my friends play for a lot of different teams, so it's like I don't really know who to support. So, but yeah, no. Normally Lottie's team most of the time.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, with they've introduced a draft now, all the players keep changing, all the different teams. So I think that's an interesting one as well for allegiances, because people will also like pick a team based on their location, but then also pick a team based on the players that are there. And then if they leave, it's like, oh, do I change my team then? Which, you know, in football would be unthinkable, but with something like a franchise tournament, it's slightly different.
I think that can make it quite difficult for fans to get like connected with a team, because as you say, like, so you might support a team and like be like, oh, I love these players, and then all of a sudden the next year they're playing for someone else, and it's kind of like, how does that then work with regards to like connecting with the people watching? I think that can make that quite, because obviously in football it's clear you support your team and that's who it is, and if it's normally one, maybe two players leave at the end of the season, they go to somewhere else, but then you still support your team. So it'd be interesting to see how that pans out over the next few years with regards to like fan bases.
Yeah, I mean, I guess as well with women's football, that it, because it's grown so much on the back of the Euros, of course, it really, I'd imagine a lot of people are picking their teams not on the base of geography, but on a base of who their favourite players are. You know, so I know we live in Birmingham, for example, and Polly is a massive Arsenal fan.
Hey, but so am I.
Well, Conti Cup final on Sunday, I'm absolutely buzzing.
Okay, what I was going to say is I'm an Arsenal men's fan.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Well, Polly and I are Preston North End men's fans, so
they don't
think you too highly in the women's game.
No, funnily enough, they're not quite made it to the WSL yet. So within, I suppose, cricket and football, who are some of the best players you've ever played with?
Well, that's a question. Charlotte Edwards, by far the best female cricketer I've ever played with. When she was in her prime, I remember watching. So I played for Kent Ladies. We played one season. We played 14 games and she opened the batting. And I'm pretty sure she got like 500s, and then like people pass number three just didn't get to bat. It was very rare that pass number three got to bat with our in batters. It was ridiculous, but like I used to watch her. She was like so unorthodox, but her timing was impeccable, and she, like, if she was at the crease you just thought you were gonna win. And so I've not come across many other cricketers like that. Yeah, and she was just a massive inspiration for everyone that was playing underneath her. And then in football, this is a funny question. So I've got a funny story around this as well. So one of my heroes has always been Farah Williams since I was younger. Obviously, when I joined Reading, she was playing for Reading. And for the first 2 weeks, I was so nervous that I didn't speak to her. I was 27 years old and I couldn't speak to her because I was so nervous. And then I actually did another podcast for someone else and she ended up listening to it, and in it I was talking about how I used to have a poster of her on my wall, and how this one time I tried to get this poster signed because I went to an England game and she just didn't see me. And so for Secret Santa that year, she got me and she gave me a signed picture of herself. How embarrassing is that? I was like, oh my God, this is so embarrassing, but I still have it. And I do keep it. So probably Farah Williams, if you can just change the game. Also, you got to put Jisoo Young up there from Chelsea, because she's another one. If she wanted to turn it on, no one was getting anywhere near her. But yeah, I played with some incredible footballers and incredible cricketers, so it's hard to pick one or two, but those would be the players that jump into my mind.
Again, football and cricket, what is your like the best game you've ever watched of football and cricket, and which you've played in? So like one that you've watched, one that you've played.
The best game of football I've ever watched was the Euros final. Mm. Not because the football was particularly good, but just because what it meant to women's football. I was there, I managed to get tickets, and I had the best tickets as well. It was amazing. But yeah, that's probably the best game of women's football I've watched, purely because of the whole situation and the way that the country got involved in it. The best game of cricket I've ever watched, probably the World Cup final when England won it. Oh, that's a really tough question. Cricket, every game against Sussex was a good game. So it was probably one of those games. Actually, it was one of those games. There was a game that was a bit controversial. I got my top score, so I got 80 not out. And we were not in a very good position. So I did really well to get to where we got. And then on the last ball of the game, there was a whole run out situation that all got a bit messy. But that was probably one of the best games I've played in. Absolutely loved it. Oh, now you got me thinking. There's a couple of England Academy games that I really enjoy playing in as well, actually. There was the one of them in South Africa, making my official debut. And football that I've played in. It was probably making my debut for Chelsea Women. Ah, no, I know which one it was. I was playing for London Bees against Chelsea Women in the Continental Cup quarterfinal, and we ended up beating them on penalties. And I, from centre-half, got two assists. I scored, and I scored my penalty and got player of the match. So that was, and that's the reason I ended up getting signed for Chelsea. So that's probably that game.
Well, yeah, that's a pretty good game. You mentioned runouts. I just thought of a question about, I don't know if you saw at the end of the summer, with the controversial Mankad or run out of the non-strikers end at Lords. We were there. It was, wow, it was a lot to take in. You were in the stands. I was in hospitality. Wow, what a day. But what do you think of the Mankad? And would you Mankad if the opportunity came?
You can't Mankad in football.
But you've retired from football. You play village cricket.
I think the football equivalent is when the ball goes out of play. Or you put the ball out of play because someone's got injured, and then you take and so you're supposed to give the ball back, but you don't. I think that's the football equivalent of a man card.
I don't think I'd man card in cricket unless like they were like really taking the mick. Like if they're like halfway down the pitch and the wicket, and I haven't even like started my run up or whatever. But I definitely give them at least a couple of warnings first and be like, "What are you doing?" Then again, if it was in a World Cup final. I am pretty competitive. I'd probably speak to my captain first, and I'd still give him a warning, to be fair. But I don't know. It's hard when you're in a competitive situation, you think differently. Right now, I'd like to say no, I wouldn't, but you just never know. In football, I've definitely been in situations where we've not given the ball back. The competitive lesson. I think, to be fair, in some situations, I think my man Kelly would probably kill us if we ended up giving the ball back after something like that.
Kind of again, looking at professionalism, comparing women's cricket and football, what do you think are some of the things that cricket, as like a growing game for the women, can learn from the WSL and the growth of women's football?
Oh, that's a very good question. Okay. I think because cricket is in the very early stages of becoming professional, obviously women's football have been doing it for a long time now. It's probably looking after the players as individuals is something that is really key. You have to treat an athlete as a person before you treat them as an athlete, especially when they're like changing into this professional environment that they may not be used to. It can be quite overwhelming at times, which I think women's football is getting a lot better, and the support around it is always there. Obviously, I know the PCA have a big input into the stuff that players might need on and off the pitch. And obviously, in football, we have the PFA, which do an absolutely fantastic job of looking after people. But I think, yeah, making sure that the athletes are fully looked after, because the training side of stuff, the matches side of stuff, that looks after itself. But I think off the pitch, making sure that these women that are becoming professional athletes are looked after as human beings, as well as athletes. That's probably something I'd say that's a key focus as they grow into the professional world.
Yeah, I think football's done that really well. But I guess one of the issues with football is that the marketing is done really well through the FA, but a lot of the financing is done through the men's teams as well. Whereas in cricket, the men's infrastructure and the women's infrastructure don't really match up with each other. So you've got regional women's cricket and county men's cricket. And in a sense, I think a lot of the people who are very against the 100 don't like the fact that it's following that more regional structure rather than the traditional county structure, and then you don't really get that crossover of people supporting the domestic game in women's cricket, or they'll support the franchise, they'll support England possibly, but you know, Central Sparks or Southern Vipers don't really feature on people's radar. So I think that's a big challenge for the marketing of cricket, and to get a sort of more of a domestic audience
Yeah, especially if it doesn't match up with the men's teams. Like, we're obviously very lucky. Every single women's team in the WSL is funded by their men's team, some more than others. But in the women's cricket, I think that going forward into the professional world, that could be an issue that they're going to have to face and they're going to have to look into, because as much as everyone loves where women's cricket and women's football is going, the financial side of thing is something that obviously they're not going to bring in the revenue that the men's teams bring in quite yet. Well, I don't know the facts about cricket, but in women's football, the women's teams aren't bringing in the same revenue as what men's teams are. So if that's the way they want to go within professional women's cricket, then that's something they're going to have to really focus on and look at how they're going to market it properly so that they can bring in that sort of stuff.
And you mentioned about looking after players. Do you think that's a big thing as well for young players coming through? Because I suppose there's much more of a pathway, especially in cricket, but also in football, for young players to come through academies and get professional contracts. You know, in football, as soon as they turn 18, but in cricket, you've seen people get professional contracts when they're 16. And it's like they're still in school, like they're all those sort of things. So do you think that's also a concern?
Yeah, it's actually... Like, it's a crazy world, because if you think about it, when I first broke into the senior team, I was 13 years old. At that point, I was nowhere near ready to be a professional athlete. I was good enough cricket-wise, as I wouldn't have been playing, but I had no idea about the professional world. And even growing up when I did, I missed a lot of school. I was quite lucky that my parents were quite strict on regards to what I did, so that I went on to do university and all that sort of stuff. But like, even now with the football, there are players that are 16, 17 years old, 18 years old, missing school every day to come and train with us. And I just think, I look at where women's sport is at the moment, there's not many. Even some of the top England internationals don't get paid enough to have football as their only career. You're going to have a career after. So I feel like looking after the players when they are young and making sure that they get the right advice and the right kind of setup around their lives is really, really important, because otherwise they'll get to the end of their sporting career. Or even some of them that won't make it. Some of them are being taken out of schools and aren't even going to make it into the professional world. But what are they going to do then? They need to have that, like, obviously it's terrible in men's football. There's been lots of stories around kids that just don't make it and then don't know what to do with their life, but it's starting to happen in women's football as well, and even women's cricket. As you say, there's players that are really young getting offered contracts, but what are they going to do if they're missing so much school, not getting their education, stuff like that? It doesn't annoy me, but sometimes I worry for the youngsters coming through because they think it's all set up for them, which is great because right then and there it is, and they don't have to worry what happens 10 years in the future. But at some point, they're going to have to worry what happens 10 years in the future. So, yeah, I think looking after players at that sort of age and just getting the right infrastructure around what they're doing is so, so important. And hopefully people are doing that.
Yeah, and of course, when you play a sport and it's like your full-time job, you're almost in some sort of a bubble. And I suppose if players are getting contracts when they're 16, 18, then probably not going to go to uni. And like... I don't know. I don't think uni necessarily teaches you everything, but it teaches you a lot about the world. And I suppose you get a life slightly outside of your sport. But if you're professional from when you literally leave school, then that's kind of all you know. And if football's then not going, or cricket's not going well, then it's like, where do you kind of turn to? Because you don't really know anything different.
Exactly. It can be I even see it with some of the youngsters that we have at Reading. Like, they come out of school, they've been offered a contract, they need to train full time, and they just don't quite get the real world. Like, if you talk to anyone my age, maybe a few years younger, who played football and cricket as hobbies and had a full-time job working in a school and went to university, like, they just don't kind of get it. There are obviously the odd few people like that do their degrees and stuff whilst they're playing, but yeah, sometimes it can be a huge bubble, and then at some point, unfortunately, bubbles pop and then they're gonna have to deal with the real world. And if you haven't had that, like, looking after type of thing or nurturing when you're younger, then you're going to be a bit stuck later on in life.
And for you, looking towards the future, what do you kind of want to do once you retire from football?
Well, hopefully I've got a few more years in me left. I'm only 29, so I'm hoping to play for a little bit. I've also said that once I finish playing football, I will give cricket like a little bit of another go. But that's questionable yet. Other than that, I've got my degree in PE and sports science. I worked in a school for 2.5 years. So teaching has always been on the agenda, whether that changes. I've also thought about doing stuff. I've always wanted to be involved in sport. So I've also thought about doing a physiotherapy master's as well. So we'll see what happens, but hopefully I continue playing for a little bit longer yet.
Yeah, it's brilliant, isn't it, to have that qualification behind you. And so you can just kind of get on with your career and see what unfolds. But you know that those doors are potentially going to open to you in the future, and you end up doing something that you really want to do. Now, you talked to us before about playing for London Bees against Chelsea in a big cup tie. You've got another big cup tie against Chelsea coming up. Is that what I hear?
Yeah, we got the short straw of playing probably the most informed team in the league right now in the next round of the FA Cup. So, yeah, that's going to be...
About shocks. It's all about giant killing.
Well, we did it last year before Christmas. We beat them 1-0, which is a bit of a shock defeat. So we've done it before. And we also gave them a pretty good run in the game before Christmas. We lost 3-2, but one of their goals was offside in the snow we played. So it can be done. They've obviously got a really busy period as well. They've got 7 games in a month. So they're going to be rotating and stuff like that. So you never know. Upset. That's what the FA Cup's all about, right? Upsets. I'm sure you'll be hoping we knock them out.
I know. It would bring me so much joy if you could knock them out. That'd be great, because I do not want to see them at Wembley on the 14th.
Deanna, it's been absolutely brilliant to meet you. And congratulations on having two fantastic sporting careers. I mean, I think that's a bit greedy, to be honest, to be good at two sports. But we're looking forward to seeing your continued success in football and, you know, lifting the FA Cup this year. Maybe, don't you?
You never know. Thank you for having me on. It's been really, really good to chat to you.
That was really interesting.
I really enjoyed that. I loved asking my question about Charlotte Edwards and Emma Hayes. Just saying, Charlotte Edwards would never throw her players under the bus after a cup final. Just saying, she was very bitter after Arsenal beat Chelsea.
Yes, although Charlotte Edwards has had three opportunities to throw her players under the bus after a cup final.
Exactly. Yeah, very true. Also, this is not like cricket related. This is... Emma Hayes did say in the press conferences, we're a team that's won a lot. Arsenal haven't won a lot. It's funny because Arsenal actually have more trophies than Chelsea. So,
this is a cricket podcast, Polly.
Just
stop.
This is my one opportunity to get it all out.
Can I just apologise to our listeners? We are returning to cricket now. But what I loved about it is that when she played cricket, she played alongside and against the top stars.
Yeah, like you name. Like just some of the best players in the world. Yeah, she's played with them, which is incredible.
Yeah, and you know, both England current England players and South African players who played in the World Cup final, she's played against them all, and it's really, really, really interesting to have had these two careers.
Yeah, I think it was also interesting to hear about professionalism because I mean, particularly in football, that's kind of something of a concern, but then also in cricket, you know, how there are really positive sides to professionalism, but also there are massive negative sides.
Absolutely. But I think there are things that cricket can learn from football.
Yeah.
And certainly in terms of marketing the game. Mm. I mean, football is a much bigger game than cricket in terms of its reach. But actually, if I were marketing cricket at the moment, I'd be looking to women who've got into football since the Euros.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, actually, there's a market of people who are into sport who would actually be people who could become strong followers of women's cricket.
Yeah, well, this is what Thunder have done, actually. So, I mean, last year they collaborated with Man United. I'm not quite sure what they fully ended up doing, but I know that United players went to a Thunder game, the Thunder players went to a United game at Old Trafford. But they've now gone to the other side of Manchester, collaborated with City, and Ellie Farrakeld and Lauren Hemp went to Sixers, and there's a piece that's going to come out. So I think that's really good because, you've now suddenly got this massive influx of Lionesses fans, which would have increased, you know, City fans, plus people who are following Lauren Hemp, interested in her. So then they'll see that collaboration is going on, and suddenly they're introduced to another team of female athletes. It might not be a sport they're necessarily interested in, but again, it's about attaching people to personalities. And that's something that I think can work really well. In fact, it just made me think of, when I was talking about that, one thing we forgot to mention was Northern Diamonds' documentary.
That was amazing, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Well, it made me laugh when I saw the trailer for it, because I was like, this is what we were hoping Sunrisers would have been making. But no, it was Northern Diamonds. But I thought it was really good to kind of document that weekend. And yeah, obviously I didn't know they were filming this at the time, but it is cool to look back on those memories from that day. And I forgot how close it was in the end.
Yeah. Yeah, it went to the last ball. A friend of the pod, Casey Levick, took a big part in that. I thought she came across really, really well, as you'd expect. Mm-hmm. And it was just a lovely story, really, of how they went from serial chokers to winners.
Yeah, I think we've spoken to a couple of guests about this, but when Katie was talking about, firstly, they've been there so many times, they just wanted it so bad, but also the emotion of when they won, because there have been so many people, I suppose her and Lauren Winfield Hill, who had just been relentless in that team, had been there for years and years.
20 years.
Mm-hmm. And finally, that they were winning something together, and it was something so significant, and at Lourdes. Mm-hmm. And I put a quote out on Twitter. I can't quite remember what Katie said, but she was like, to dream to play at Lourdes, well, it's a stupid dream because, as a female cricketer and a domestic player, that was never going to happen. So when I was there, I just had to take it all in, because that's such a special moment that you don't ever think is going to happen.
That was a great day.
Yeah.
It was a really good day. Good. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. So shall we wrap up there for this week?
Yes, but we're back next week with another guest.
Yeah, another guest, an international guest.
Which
is very exciting.
Look forward to that.
But in the meantime, you can follow us on social media. So our Instagram is at Naughty Child Podcast, and our Twitter is OO Child Podcast. Mm-hmm.